Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey, friends, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here. I hope you had the most amazing Easter. If you missed either one of the weeks that we did with Ann Voskamp leading up to Easter, can I please encourage you to go back and listen? She was so profound and so deep and so practical and everything in between. And I would just encourage you to go back and listen and share it with a friend. That would be amazing. All right, my random thought before we kick off today is that you guys have been very patient as I have talked a whole lot about writing a book and editing a book and maybe complaining a little bit about a book. And so as I was writing this today, adding a chapter, changing around some things, I thought, you know what, I'm going to share this with you. And so maybe you'll laugh, hopefully you'll laugh, maybe it'll be a little word for someone. But I wrote today about marriage and spark, the spark, you know, you have in, when you first meet someone, you hold their hand and the spark you always think you're going to have in marriage. And so here's what I had to say about it. Here's the truth. Spark is actually overrated. Don't get me wrong. It's magical at the beginning. It's the stuff we dreamed of back when we had Jason Bateman posters taped to our bedroom walls and thought love would always feel like butterflies and prom slow dances. But spark fades. And when it does, it can leave you wondering if something's broken. But you know what's better than spark? A man who loves Jesus. The kind who quietly lets go of his dream of a single-digit golf handicap to coach a swarm of six-year-olds who don't even know which direction the goal is. The man who is steady and sacrificial, who gives up his dream for a new truck because your daughter finally made the dance team she's been praying for, and the costumes cost more than your first apartment. And yes, he cuts his toenails on his side of the bed, and somehow your left foot always finds the jagged shard at 6 a.m. on the way to the shower. And in that moment, you strongly consider slipping a little antifreeze into his Gatorade, but then you breathe, you laugh, and you remember he's gold. Because anyone who's been married longer than a hot minute will tell you, give me the man with a CPAP machine and a quiet faithfulness over the cool guy with a fragile ego and a marginal walk with the Lord. All right, you guys, I'm going to stop there. But that's what I'm writing about. And I kind of do go back to the point that some of the things that we take for granted in our spouses, that those actually do bring sparks. So I come back around to that at some point. But hopefully they gave you a little laugh and a little preview of what's coming your way next year. Don't worry, we're not even close yet. All right, but today we have one of my author friends with me, and her name is Rebecca George, and we both published with the same publisher, which is Esther Press, and she has a new book out called You're Not Too Late, Trusting God's Timing in a Hurry Up World. And we're going to talk about God's timing when it feels like everyone is passing us by and we're waiting on God, and when the thing that we're waiting for becomes an idol, and how do we get past that? And so I'm so glad Rebecca's here. She's a good friend and an amazing writer. And yeah, we're going to talk about her book and this whole idea, how do we wait well? Glad you're with us. Here we go with Rebecca George. Rebecca, welcome to Mesmerized. How are you?
Oh, Cynthia, I'm so happy to be back with you. This is so fun. I'm good.
Well, thanks for writing another book so we had things to chat about. Not that we couldn't have chatted anyway, but it is helpful to have good content.
Totally. This is so fun. I woke up today excited to talk to you. You're one of my favorite podcasters. So this is awesome.
Thanks, friend. Well, you and I met and I don't remember if you've been on this podcast before or my other one, but
it was the other one.
It was. Yes. Okay. Yes. So we met because we have the same publisher. And So we met at a conference or something back before our books were ever published, right? We were still writing or something.
We were baby, like new authors. Like, what in the world are we doing? But I'm excited to know you. So we have two books almost under both of our belts now. That feels wild.
Right? I know, right? And I, guys, I'm fully aware that not everybody listening is like in the process of writing a book or thinking about writing a book or cares about writing a book. But since you and I have both written two books, I'm gonna ask you the question. Is the process, do you enjoy the process more or do you enjoy having the book more? If that makes sense.
I love this question. I like the cycle of the work that we do, meaning I love to write. I also have a marketing brain. I also love to be out on the road speaking. I actually love it all, but yeah. I don't think I would love spending all of my time doing one of those things. So it's like when I'm over the writing part, it's like time to market it. And when I have had a million conversations like this and I'm ready to write again, it's time to write again, you know? Yeah. So I think the work suits me. Maybe that's
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah. I love John Acuff. I don't know if you ever listen to stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I love him. He was on the podcast this fall, I think. And I was listening to something. He writes all the time, a prolific writer. And this kind of applies to anything you're doing in life. But he talks about, like, how hills pay bills. Like, you know, when you're running, like, you know, you have to run the hill, but then you get the stamina from it. And at the same time, you have to write the book. And all the days of sitting, and I'm so extroverted that the hardest part for me is the writing. Because I'm sitting alone all day in my thoughts. But at the end of the day, he talks about, like, when he writes books, he visualizes when you get to open the box and you get the first book in your hand and you get to talk about it or speak. And he's like, he has to live in that space to stay in the current writing. He has to be thinking forward. And I feel like that's me, is I have to be like, okay, on the other side of this, good things come. So anyway, it's
that's
a journey, right?
Totally. Love it.
Well, I am. So as we're talking about journeying through life, I love the title of your book. And again, as a girl in the middle of writing a book who is in the middle trying to figure out the exact title, this is so good. You're not too late. Trusting God's timing in a hurry up world. And I was thinking about that, in a hurry up world. That's such great. That's great wording, because I feel like this morning as I was getting my little one to school, I was like, hurry up, we have to go, hurry up. And how that is ingrained in us, that we have to hurry up or we're going to miss something. And so tell us just a little bit about that. Like, what, when you and I talked before we even started recording, you're like, this is a message I needed and everyone I know needs. And so nutshell it for us. What's the message in this hurry up world?
Totally, Cynthia. I think as I started examining my own life, at first, a little insider baseball, I thought this was going to be a book on singleness, because I got married later in my 20s, so not all that late in life, but I was a bridesmaid 12 times before I got married. I had planned my fair share of wedding showers, bachelorette parties, etc. And I always felt like I was waiting on it to be my turn. Right. And so I felt like I had a lot to say to single women later in their 20s or in their 30s about how to wait well. But then as I looked around at my life, I began to realize, like, the day I got married wasn't the day that my waiting and feeling behind or too late for my life, like, that didn't stop when I married Dustin. Right. It actually had only just begun, because then I felt this, like, hurry up desire to have kids. And we feel that in our careers. We see it everywhere in our culture. Like, if we get sick, we don't have a best friend bring us soup over for dinner. We just DoorDash it from Panera. If we have an early flight and we don't want to inconvenience someone, we just have an Uber there in 10 minutes, right? Like, our whole culture that we find ourselves in right now, somewhat because of technology, has just made our lives run at such a fast pace. And I think when we do that in the insignificant parts of life, like, we want our food faster, we want to get to the airport quicker, when we're unwilling to sit in the waiting in those silly day-to-day things, we have no resilience to do it in the more significant pieces of our lives, in the deepest longings of our hearts. And so I think it's just left us in this place of always hurrying up onto the next thing, whether it be small or very significant parts of our lives. And so I look back at that in my own story and I go, well, no wonder. Like, no wonder I feel this way. No wonder it's hard for me to experience joy, and I struggle with doubt, and I have resentment over my season of life. No wonder. But as I began kind of thinking through what are the things that I struggle with as it pertains to my waiting and my longing, there was a lot that bubbled up. We chose 10 things. I could have done more. I could have written about more. But my hope is really to just have a conversation around, what does it look like to biblically walk towards hope, joy, redemption, community, even when we're waiting. We can still experience those things as we walk with the Lord and walk with each other. So
Yeah. And you know, the thing that's interesting about waiting is, like you said, you know, you feel like you wait. I too was in 1,000 weddings. I can't tell you how many bows have been on my butt walking down the aisle.
We went, yes, girl.
When I was in it, that was the big thing. We had a bow on our butt every time. I'm like, oh. It's funny that you say that because I remember being in a million weddings like you. I think I had like a million bows on my butt because that was
100%.
Yeah, that was like the wedding style back then as a bridesmaid. Like we had the bows on our butt all the time. But I remember waiting. And then once I got married, like you're saying, you know, waiting for kids. What's the right amount of time? When not to wait? If I waited too long, am I too old? Am I whatever the things? And then, you know, the next phase is waiting for them to get a little bit older. Because then, you know, things look different. Or waiting for my career to hit the next level or to get a chance to write a book or two. Or then waiting for them to come out or waiting for our parents to be in better health. Or I mean, it's just a never-ending cycle. And I love that you're speaking into this because many of the things, if not most of the things we're waiting for are good things, right? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think that's such an important part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Like I think when I was longing to be married, there was part of me that felt like my struggle in that was wrong or it was wrong of me to spend that much time maybe thinking about it. Now, do things in our lives become idols when we elevate them to a dangerous place of prominence that is meant for God alone? Yeah, totally. And I talk about that in the book. But the desire to have grandkids, the desire to reconcile a relationship, to take that next step in your career, you just rattled off a million other examples. It can look so different in each one of our lives. But I think that's an important part of it in remembering like, man, this desire is from the Lord, but how am I stewarding it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so let's talk about this. This whole idea of waiting well. Give me a couple of things, I need to use the word indicia. I've never sounded more like a lawyer in my life. Pulled out one of my old legal words, but what are some characteristics of waiting well? What does that look like? And then in a minute, we'll talk about some characteristics of not waiting well.
Yeah, yeah. I think waiting well looks like having joy anyway. Like we can get more into that, but I think that's a really good earmark of it, not placing the full weight of our hope and our joy on the thing that we want, but in the God that we serve and we walk with, right? Like joy biblically is what happens in us. It's a byproduct of what happens in us as we abide in Jesus, as we walk with him, as we walk in community with other believers. So my joy does not hinge on the thing that I want in my life, right? And so when I look at someone who I believe is waiting well, I see joy on their face. I see them confronting the sin struggles that accompany their wait. I see them placing their hope in the Lord in the middle of the meanwhile, right?
Yeah.
Those are, I think, some things of what it looks like when I'm doing it well. I think we all know what it looks like when we don't do it well. Right.
Like I live that when I don't do it well. Before we skip that though, let me ask you this. I think about people like that are waiting on the Lord to answer something with a diagnosis, right? And some of the people that I've seen exhibit the most incredible joy have been people that have been really sick and waiting. And that kind of comes to my mind too.
Yeah.
And so let's talk just a minute about this idea of joy. And I feel like sometimes joy, it gets over, I don't want to say overplayed a little bit, but you know, it's not happiness. That's circumstantial. Joy is despite the circumstances. Like we know all these things.
Duh.
I know all these things, but at the same time, yes, yes. And what do we do when like literally if the one thing you want right now is to be married, the one thing you want is a child, like how do we find joy in the midst of that? Any thoughts, tips, tricks?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you a mindset shift is what I would maybe call it. I know a lot of times in the past, and I'll point the finger right back at myself, and hopefully maybe this will resonate. I have equated getting the thing I want and experiencing joy with God is good when that happens. God is faithful when that happens. God is in control when that happens. Mm-hmm. And I think the dangerous place for us is when we kind of tie that circumstantial thing to God's nature or his character, right? Because the tricky part about that is the opposite also has to be true, right? If I'm not getting the thing I want, well, is God not good? Is he not faithful? Is he not in control? We know that that's not true, right? And so I have had to a little bit like untie my circumstances from his character and remind myself and remind my heart, like, in the middle of the deepest valley, in the middle of me not knowing if healing will ever come or if the relationship will be restored, He is in control. He is good. He is gracious. He is merciful despite those things. And I even, as you were talking about, like, people who are very sick or hopeful for healing, people like that, I always think of Johnny Erickson Tada. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to interview her.
Several times. I love her.
I love her story and her testimony. And every time I interview her and get off the recording with her, I just think, like, man, I complain and fix my eyes on the most trivial things in this life. And I'm always so convicted when I talk to her and hear about her life and what living in a broken world as a disabled person, the majority of my life, when I hear her reflect on that and the challenges and how God has shown up for her and who he is in her life, like, I'm just so challenged to just take my eyes off the things that don't matter. And I don't know, her joy in the Lord just, like, blows me away every time. So when you were saying that, like, she is who I think of.
And she's a quadriplegic, everyone. If you don't know her, you need to look her up. She's amazing. And here's two things from Johnny Erickson Tada that I think really speak into what you're saying exactly. One, she'd always dreamed of being a physical therapist of some sort and being involved in the PT world. And so if you don't know this about her, she, in her teenage years, I think her senior year in high school kind of thing, she dove into some body of water that was too shallow. And so she's a quadriplegic now, but she talked about she always wanted to be a PT, and now she's on the other side of that in terms of needing PT and the irony of that. And she talks just about, and she has this great quote that I'm going to butcher, but basically, if being in this wheelchair is the cost of me knowing Jesus the way I do, then I would do it every time. And I think that is, like, the key is, as we're going through these times, like, I just want to know you better, Lord. And if me waiting longer on getting married or not getting married, or me waiting on kids, or me waiting for retirement, or whatever the thing is, trying to get to that place and praying for the Lord, the Holy Spirit, to speak that place into it. Like, if that's the cost of me knowing you better, that's a cost I've got to be willing to pay. And I think that's the takeaway in her story that I always go back to. Did you have thoughts on that?
Totally. I did. I was just going to add another quote from her that I love. She says, it's similar to what you just said, God often will allow what he hates to accomplish what he loves.
Right.
Right. If the cost of that was what was required for me to know you in this way, then yes. So I think that can certainly apply to many of our stories and many of our seasons of struggle, of suffering, of all those things. They're the greatest teachers, often the hardest teachers,
but the hardest. Okay. And so I have an alliteration problem. A real problem. Like, I just like to speak with alliteration and write with alliteration. And so maybe because I'm writing a book. Yeah. So that might be the problem, but I was sitting here looking through your book and I sent you a couple notes about what I wanted to talk about. And I said idle versus idle, like a car idling versus something as an idol. And I was thinking, actually, it's not even alliteration as much as some play on words or something. It's something.
I am here for it.
But thanks. Well, so I was thinking about this, and I have two kids right now that are both waiting. They're both seniors, one in high school, one in college. They're both about to graduate. And
bless
both
your
waiting.
Mama heart. Also.
Oh my, I mean, it's all kinds of all over the place here. And both of them are waiting for the next thing. They're waiting to see what it is. One's waiting to see what law school she gets into and all that. And the other one's waiting on the Naval Academy to see if he gets in there. So everybody's kind of waiting. And we've been talking about this idea of waiting well, and how big are we making the thing in our head? And so talk to us about that, because as we're sitting in idle, like how a car idles, just kind of waiting, we don't want it to become an idol, like an idol from the Bible. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And such a, I saw your notes and I was like, oh, I'm excited to see what she has to say about this. This is good. I think that happens so often. And I talk about a little bit of a cycle that I think happens in my mind and in a lot of our thinking when we're in this place. And what we tend to do is we look to the right or to the left at the thing we want or somebody else getting to take that next step forward or whatever it is. So we look and then we long for that thing. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself is not bad, right? Just as we talked about a minute ago, the desire for marriage, the desire to take the next step in our career. But the third step, I think, is where it gets dangerous, because we linger, right? So we look. There's looking, longing, and lingering. Mm. When we linger on that thing, when it's all that we think about, we ruminate on it, we think about the outcome that is the part of the story that's unwritten yet, that's where it gets dangerous in our hearts, because we tend to, and this is the way I define it in the book, elevate that particular thing to a place of prominence meant for God alone, right? Mm-hmm. And we can probably all think of areas in our lives in the past or today where maybe that has accidentally happened. And so, yeah, I think it's important for us to check our hearts in that when we're walking through one of those seasons, either in walking alongside somebody else who maybe starts to notice, like, hey, this is, all of our conversations are centered around this thing. Like, this may be entering into idle territory, or, you know, maybe you're just noticing, like, I've not slept well in a week, or I don't typically struggle with anxiety, but I've just noticed in this season, I have this kind of undercurrent of anxiety all the time. Maybe mm-hmm. that thing has become an idol. And so I also think, you know, this was coming to my mind as you use that term idol. I think a lot of times when we're waiting, we can almost see that as a like permission slip to just sit around and just like mm-hmm. sit on our hands and wait on the Lord to like take that next step. And there's no responsibility on our part. And I think that is a challenge as well of like, I don't want to run ahead of God, but I want to be faithful. Mm-hmm. So like, which side of the fence do I sit on? And to that, I think the greatest encouragement I would give myself and our listeners is usually there's like a next step mm-hmm. that you feel maybe God's given you the discernment or the wisdom to take. So many times we want to understand the finish line when like we're at the starting line, just waiting to take that very first step. And so I think that's a big piece of it too, is really just entrusting that next step to the Lord. And then when we take that one, he's going to grant us the courage and the strength to take the next one. And it's that journey again and again, as we continue to wait on him. So,
yeah. And I was talking to my daughter about something, a friend of hers that's really, really longing for something in her life. And my daughter was saying to her, one of her college friends, she was like, have you, in the nicest, kindest way, but she's like, hey, have you put yourself in a position for God to be able to honor what you're asking him to do? And I thought, wow, that's such wisdom that I could use in my own life. So many, you know, I think back to when I wanted to get married, whatever. Was I living in a godly way that would bring in the kind of godly man that God would honor that with? The job promotion, the whatever the thing is, are we living in such a way that God can answer that? Can he bless that in our lives? And so I like that you're saying, like, whatever steps in front of you, even if you're not sure what that step is, always the step is to be prayerful, to be a person who's in God's word, that's in community. Like, those are always the steps that ready us for what God's going to do next. And then the other thing I was thinking as you're talking too, is I think in those places where we're trying not to make it an idol, but it is consuming us. For me, going back to gratitude is always key too. Like, I have this little sign in my house that says, you know, I remember praying for the things that I have today. And mm-hmm. and I have to remind myself, like, you know, when even with my little one that we adopted, sometimes I'm like, gosh, I'm ready for it to get in this next stage. Things, you know, if he's in a hard stage, I'm like, okay, like, let's step back for the fact how hard I prayed over this adoption, you know, and to be able to not only appreciate that God has already answered some prayers, but to see his faithfulness and let that kind of overshadow the fact that we feel like God hasn't shown up or it hasn't happened yet, or that we're being delayed, right? Just that gratitude, so that moment of pause.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I think that is such an important piece, because we cannot sit in a place of gratitude and recognition of God's provision and reflecting on his past faithfulness and allow something to become an idol at the same time. Like, our hearts, it's almost like this cold turkey, like, stop and turn for our hearts when we do that. So I love that. That's so important. Yeah.
Let's talk about when somebody else gets the thing that we've wanted. And I mean, oh, it's brutal, isn't it? Like, you're over here. I remember this happening with my husband's job a while back. When we were young married many years ago. And I mean, I had prayed that my husband could switch to a different job with a different opportunity or whatever. And I mean, I just felt like we had just surrendered this and all the things. And one of my friends, that her husband had a really good job. Well, she called and she wasn't bragging or anything. She's like, you would not believe this. Out of the blue, he got a call and he's moved to this other one, which would have been a dream job for my husband. I remember being like, you got to be kidding me. Like, are we serious here? And I think we've all felt that on some level, whether it's our kids and praying for them to come back from the prodigal state and someone else's kid does, or whatever it is, the promotions, we've all felt it. So let's talk about it. Comparison, yeah. Jealousy while we're waiting. I mean, nothing brings out the bitterness when you're waiting and then somebody else gets the thing you're waiting on. So
that's right.
How do we manage that?
Yeah. I think the greatest challenge is what happens in our hearts when we don't manage it. Meaning bitterness grows in our hearts, resentment grows in our hearts. And then I'll just use my season of singleness as an example of that. Like every time I had to be a bridesmaid, every time I had to plan a shower, it was just like books stacking on top of one another of just like hurt after hurt after hurt. But then if I look back on and reflect on that now, like how much did I miss in God blessing all of my people who I, you know, married off one by one? How much of God's hand did I miss in like the joy and celebration of what he was doing in their lives? Like not to throw toxic positivity on it, because that's not what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like I missed out on a lot of joy because I sat so much in the like selfish seat of like, when's it going to be Rebecca's turn? Mm-hmm. And so a couple things that have helped me. One, if I know I have a shower to go to, bachelorette party, whatever, like in a couple weeks, I have a baby shower. Me and my husband have been married almost 6 years yet, so far. We don't have kids yet. And so that's a natural longing in our hearts something I get asked about all the time, right? So if I know I'm going to have to walk in that room and I want to show up for my friend with joy, I can pre-grieve that a little bit with the Lord before I go to the shower, right? I can go to him and say, God, search my heart. You know my heart. I want to show up for this friend well. I am asking that you would grant me the joy that doesn't feel like it exists in my heart today. Like you know my heart better than I do. Allow me to show up for her with joy and not miss what you're doing. And also, like, how long are you going to make me wait? Right? Like, be honest with him. He can take your longing. He can take how your heart feels. He knows how your heart is knit together and how you're feeling about the situation already. And so I think pre-grieving it can really help and allow you to show up better. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think really trips us up is when people ask about our longing. So it's one thing to get the phone call and your husband gets the promotion, or her husband gets the promotion and your husband doesn't. It's another thing when somebody just directly asks you about something that's like a tender topic in your heart, right? And so I'll stick with the example of kids. I know if I go to a baby shower, I'm a pastor's wife, so often if we have things like that at the church and I go, somebody's going to ask me when we're having kids, right? Like it's just the inevitable. I don't have to get offended by it. I don't have to let it ruin my day. What I can do is before I walk in the room, decide, this is how I'll answer that question. In a way that gives a little bit of grace to the person who's asking, that's probably just genuinely curious about my life, gives my season a little bit of grace without feeling the need to like over explain and justify and all of those things, just because I don't really know what to say and I'm caught off guard, right? So those are a couple of things I think that have helped me, the pre-grieving and then kind of the deciding how I want to show up so that I'm able to have the heart space, have the brain space to just show up for my friend with joy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really good. And in the midst of that, this whole idea, which is literally the title, you're not too late, in those places where it feels like God is late, like we've felt it before. I mean, I think if all of us, if we're honest, we're like, you were late. I mean, I think even biblically, when, was it Lazarus, when they were like, where were you? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Like, you could have done something about this. Jesus was going to do the miracle anyway, but he grieved with them in the moment, even knowing that he was going to do the miracle. And so I think knowing that Jesus can grieve with us when we don't feel like he missed it. And so talk to us though a little bit about that, about this, you're not too late. Like we can't be too late in whatever we're hoping for if we know God's timing is perfect. So what do we do with that?
Yes, man, that is such a tension, right? Like we love things that are black and white, this side of heaven. And I think, why did I not meet the guy? Why did I walk through the miscarriage? Why am I, you know, in a season of suffering? Those are those things in our lives that may or may not make sense this side of heaven, right? Mm-hmm. And so if, like, theologically, if I'm to step back and go, what is true? Mm-hmm. God is in control. I either believe that or I don't. Right?
Yep.
So if I believe that he is in control over my situation, over my season of life, that he's orchestrating what will bring him the most glory and me the most good, that is not always going to line up with how I would have written the story.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
And so there is a little bit of like, okay, God, I'm opening my hands in surrender, just in trusting that this thing that I wouldn't have chosen is what will mold and refine me more into the likeness of Christ. Mm. I talk in the book about this term that like wrecked my life and the way that I think about this. My husband and I went to Israel the year that we got married, and a theme of the trip was we saw olive trees everywhere we went, like went to Bethlehem, went to the place where they carve all the statues, went to Jerusalem and the Garden of Gethsemane. There's olive trees everywhere. And I could see my husband's wheels turning as we were walking around, and he was trying to figure out, is there a species of olive tree that could possibly grow in the climate where we lived at the time in Mississippi, which is super hot, humid climate. So I knew it would be kind of hard to find, but he found this one species called the Arbequina. And in his research about the Arbequina, he ended up buying a couple of the trees. And as he was researching how to take care of them, he discovered this term called chill hours. And what that basically means is every species of olive tree, and I assume a lot of other plants, I'm not the one with the green thumb in the George family, but
Me neither.
Yeah, here. Yeah. But basically what that means is every olive tree has to withstand a certain number of hours in the cold, in the dark, in the winter, in order to produce fruit. So the Arbequina had an appropriate number of chill hours that it needed for our climate. So he planted an Arbequina in our backyard. It kind of leafed out over the couple of years that followed. And when I was sitting on our back porch before we moved back to Tennessee, I was kind of in idea concept mode for this book and just kind of reflecting on this idea of longing. And I looked at that olive tree and I remembered all the research he did. And I was thinking back, like, what was that term that he found? And I did a little research and looked back at it, and it just stopped me dead in my tracks, Cynthia, because like, isn't that us? Isn't that me when I'm waiting on the thing that my heart most longs for, that when I'm in the dark, when I'm in the chill hours, that is often what is required for me to produce fruit spiritually. And I would love to have a life that didn't have to have chill hours. I think we would all love to escape them. But I think, as we talked about a moment ago, those seasons are often the things that produce the most spiritual fruit in us. And I'm grateful for that, even if I don't understand it this side of heaven, you know?
So good. So good. Yeah, because the environment matters, and the olive tree isn't going to make it in Mississippi or Tennessee or wherever you were at the time, but right, without certain conditions. And that's the thing. If God gives us the gift, he gives us whatever the thing is, it's not going to thrive if the conditions aren't right. And he is too good to give it to us when the conditions aren't right for the things that we're praying for, the good things we're praying for, the God things we're praying for, right? When we're asking for them at a time that's not ripe. It's just like same thing with our kids, right? Like I'm not gonna give my second grader a car. I think a car is a good thing for him at some point, but it's not today. And I'm not gonna give my high school son a trust fund. Not that he has one, anyone, don't you worry, but like that's not what my 17 or 18 year old needs. And so I just think, you know, if we can think of it in practical terms, and how much more does God know? And I was just praying back to my kiddo. I've got college on the brain, but my kiddo that's waiting to hear, you know, is he gonna go to the Naval Academy or is he gonna go to this other college? Both are great opportunities for him. But I was just praying this morning, I'm like, Lord, you just know so much more. You know that if he gets the Naval Academy, like, is there hazing? Who are the kids that are going to, of course there is, but who are the kids that are going to be there? Who's going to impact him? What wars will be in the future? Where would he be serving? What would this look like for his life? Do you have a wife that you want for him? And I go through this, I'm like, it's too much. Like, it's just too much. I don't know, Lord. Like, at some point you just have to throw your hands up and be like, I trust you, period. And I think it's just a good reminder, guys, whatever it is, 99.9% of you are not waiting on the Naval Academy, but you're waiting on something. And there are just as many unknowns out there that we can't foresee. And God is too good to give us the olive tree in bad conditions, and even conditions that are just not optimal. He's too good to do that, and he's too wise and powerful, and he has a plan. And so when it feels too late, then we step back and say, what do we know, right?
Yeah. And like the God who created the Arbequina, the God who deemed it to be so that it would need a certain number of chill hours to thrive and survive and produce fruit, the God who set the earth into motion, like that is the God who our lives are under his care and control.
Yeah.
Like that kind of powerful, good, faithful God.
Yeah.
And I think if I spend any amount of time just dwelling on who he is and the magnitude of his just holiness, his power, his goodness, it does lift my heart a little bit from the depths of like, how's it going to work out? If I just step back and go, wait, that God actually has every answer to every question I'm asking. Yeah. And my life is in his control.
Totally. We were laughing this morning at our house because my husband's been running a lot, and so he's thinner than he usually is. And so we were laughing. I know, yeah. We were laughing because one of our high school son's shorts were sitting there. And you know how the boys now wear real short shorts?
And Shorty shorts.
I mean, it's X-rated. I need blinders most of the time when his friend's over. I'm like, gross. But so my husband's laughing. He's like, what if I wear these shorts, like wherever we're going? I'm like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think that's a good God lesson too, that when we're like, I know you can do all that, just because he can doesn't mean he should. And so just that reminder, you're right. He's powerful. He's all knowing and he can do it. And if he's not, there's a reason. And in that wait, let's wait well. Let's not make it an idol. Let's not have the comparison and the envy and all of that. Like let's draw to him and know him Amen. Better through the process, and maybe take on our Johnny Erickson Tata quote that, you know, like if this is the price to pay to know Jesus better, then I'll take the wait 10 out of 10. Right.
Yeah. Amen. That's so good. And this will never, we will never drift towards thinking like this in this way, in a biblical way about this, right? That's the hard thing. We will always drift towards hurrying up. We'll always drift towards a fast pace of life. So I think if it feels like you're pushing back against culture, if it feels countercultural, like you're doing something right.
Yeah, totally. So you guys, the book is You're Not Too Late, Trusting God's Timing in a Hurry Up World by Rebecca George. I'm going to read you a little bit that I loved in this book. It says, either here on earth or one day in glory, you will experience the perfection of God's plan for your story. If the story isn't good, keep offering it back to him and surrender as you await God's plan for your redemption. As the prophet Zephaniah exclaims, the Lord your God is in your midst, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you by his love. He will exult over you with loud singing. This is not the end, and you are not too late. And I just think that's a beautiful word that I think we all need. And I think this is a beautiful book. Literally, the cover's beautiful, but all of it, it's beautiful and something I think we're all struggling with. And I'm just going to tell you a lot of the listeners, I'd say maybe most of the listeners are probably have older kids like I do. I think this is a great book for maybe our college kids, young adults, because I remember this in my 20s, feeling like everybody was ahead of me. Early 30s, everybody's, you know, whether they've already got married, they already had a kid, or they made the first professional whatever, or got the car. Like, I think this is a good word, not just for us, wherever we are in life, but maybe, yeah, think about the adult kids in your lives too, so. Thanks, friend.
Thank you, friend. I'm so grateful.
So good to see you. Best wishes on your book and come back again, will you?
Of course. Anytime.
All right, you guys, check out our book, You're Not Too Late by Rebecca George, Trusting God's Timing in a Hurry Up World. And then I also wanted to say thank you so much for leaving reviews for the podcast. I have been reading it. It has been so helpful. I'm so thankful that you guys are laughing and enjoying it. And it also helps me determine what future content will be because I can see what you guys are enjoying. So thanks for doing that. It helps other people find us. So take a minute. If you haven't recently, would you leave a review for the show? Share it with a friend. That would be amazing. And so you guys, thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the very best.